Today's show is brought to you by School Spirit Vending. School Spirit Vending has a hassle-free, year-round fundraising program for schools. You can learn more at schoolspiritvending.com.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
In today's show, I'm joined by Jessica Cabin, who I get to connect with. I have the honor to connect with her every week in the Mastermind. And she talks about leading with joy, how her understanding of early childhood development formed her understanding of the principal role, a coding club for kindergarten she started, and how feedback can hurt and how to deal with it, so much more. I never take for granted that you're listening to this show. I hope you enjoy it. Thanks again for tuning in. Hey, Better Leaders, I am so excited. Like, listen, I am thrilled. This is a real joy for me because I am interviewing and getting to talk to somebody that I now consider a friend. She's in my Thursday Night Mastermind, is a complete rock star, and you're going to learn so much today. So my very special guest is Jessica Cabin, and she has been a kindergarten principal in Austin, Minnesota for the past 5 years. Previous to this, she was an assistant middle school principal and special ed supervisor. Her teaching career included work in special ed as a music therapist. She facilitates the Minnesota P3 Principal Leadership Series as well as the Principal Academy through the University of Minnesota. She is passionate about leading in the early years and supporting other leaders in gaining balance between the business of school and life. Jessica, thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
Oh, I'm excited. This is such an incredible opportunity. It's just going to be weird because I listen to these. It'll be just really weird that I'm part of this now and a great opportunity.
Is that weird though? We talk every week. It's okay.
Like, I know. This is very cool. It's an extra opportunity to connect with you during the week. So that's a bonus.
It is a bonus. I tweeted about that as well. I don't know if you saw it.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Oh yeah. I'm just so excited. I know this is going to be aired later, but it's an early Christmas present for me, Daniel. So thank you so much.
Very cool. Jessica, so what inspired you to get into education and pursue a career there?
Really helping others, but I took a really non-traditional route to education. I went to school. My undergrad was in music therapy. I was actually a music major in college. So I didn't exit with a education degree, and I worked with adults with disabilities and then really found that a passion for working with younger children. So then I went back to school and got my teaching license and moved into special education. And from there, it's just always been filling a need and really trying to do my best to serve others.
And how would you describe your leadership style? How'd you develop it?
Well, and it's funny because I was reflecting on this and I was trying to find a coined phrase to kind of earmark me. And you've obviously spent time with me, and people who know me know I'm probably the square peg trying to go in the round hole kind of person.
Okay. So, just make it fit.
Yes. I'm like, I'm just a little quirky and things I do are I'm a little bit silly at times, but I'm going to take Bethany Hill's lead and say it, joyful leadership. I think that's been my best fit. She kind of speaks of that. And I think I really try to do my best to lead with joy and to make sure that everyone who comes to our school has some happiness in their life, because I mean, that just really makes our days better, our lives better. And how can you not learn when you're happy or in the happiest place in southeastern Minnesota? Really.
Right. That's the maybe debatable. I don't know about that.
Oh man, you haven't been to kindergarten center. Even at 10 degrees below zero, Daniel, still a warm and welcoming place.
I love it. Explain your school a little bit, because it is unique in how it's set up. So can you talk a little bit about that?
I can talk for days about Woodson, but it's an all-day, everyday kindergarten center, and it's been all-day kindergarten center for 12 years. But in the state of Minnesota, they just authorized funding for all-day kindergarten in the last 3 years. So we were really ahead of the curve in establishing programming to meet the developmental needs of our youngest learners. So it is, this year, we're 15 sections of kindergarten. So it's about 350, 360 kindergarten, and we also have two sections of preschool in our building. So it is a very joyful, very active and energetic place to work.
I can only imagine. I know that through my experiences, I worked with pre-service teachers in early childhood education. It was an awesome experience. I know how to teach, but my background, you know, is middle and high school. But being able to go to the early childhood centers and see, I guess, like what you were talking about, joy, the curiosity of just a young mind, really where the sky, it seems, was the limit. At least that was my takeaway. That was like the best part of every single day. And of course, I gave feedback to my teachers, but I just wanted to see what the kids would do next. I found it absolutely fascinating.
Oh, it's incredible. And evolving my role and understanding the science and the research behind appropriate instructional practices and then reframing how I lead to make sure I'm supporting teachers and students has really redefined the principalship for me at this level. For example, now it'll be a full year now that I do every class every day. So every morning after I do bus arrival and parent drop off, I go in and greet every classroom every morning. And it is an incredible way to build relationships and connect with kids, because when you only have them for 174 days, I only have like minutes to really impact them, to help them see the potential for them as they grow up and grow into successful adults. And so I take that very, it's a very heavy responsibility that we have, even though people are like, oh, it's cute that you work with these kids, but it's so critical for them to develop those sparks and interests and have very innovative and high interest activities to get them engaged in learning and moving along the appropriate gap. I mean, we don't want any gaps. We want to make sure that kids are excelling and graduating from high school and going on to post-secondary opportunities. So it's a big job for some little kids, that for certain.
Yeah, big job, little kids, big responsibility. What are some of those really high interest activities that you've seen and loved around your campus? I don't get a lot of early childhood principals, so this is quite a treat. And I know a bunch of the listeners, right, serve in schools like yours or similar. Mm-hmm. So let's give them some good meat that they can chew on and bring to their campus.
Absolutely. One of the things I really enjoy highlighting at our school is in more traditional early learning centers, you might have a classroom that has a play center space in the classroom. But when we had an expansion 6 years ago, the Woodson teachers really decided that for equitable practices, they moved the play centers out of the individual classrooms. And we actually have two classrooms dedicated for play learning. And so students go into those classrooms every day for 20 to 25 minutes and engage in themed playful learning that's aligned to what we're teaching in the classrooms, but also exposes them to a ton of different tools. And it's been such a unique opportunity because it provides equitable opportunities for all kids. So it's not just this teacher has all this great play toy information and play equipment, so this room's better. All the kids have exposure to exactly the same thing, and teachers are super dedicated to reviewing what we're providing in those rooms, tweaking it, and then every month putting new tools in. So we have water tables, we have Lego walls, we have dramatic play stations, we have smart boards in there, Legos, building blocks. It's just incredible. And it's so much fun to watch the teachers just facilitate discussion with the students and how they can bridge the learning that's happening in the classroom into that experiential environment. So, I mean, that's one of our very exciting things to do. And then last year, we really started to dabble in the area of innovation and engineering and technology with a coding club. So I work with, starting in January, I'll work with three sections of 10 to 15 students, and we meet weekly and we learn the basic understanding of sequencing and creating code to programming BBots and Spheros. And then we share out our work either on Twitter or we have a blog that we share out with. And then we invite parents in multiple times throughout the spring to see the excitement and energy that the kids have in that program. So that's been a ton of fun. And then our teachers do great work with our iPads and incorporating those into learning centers, and then also just extending some of that piece with social media and sharing out to families.
That's incredible. So, you know, you're talking about coding, you know, with young kids.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody for some reason like fast forwarded to this point, or they just weren't paying attention, reiterate for the listeners how young these kiddos are.
4, 5, and 6 year olds.
It's crazy. I mean, that just blows my mind, because I've worked with high school kids, and I'm in the middle level now. And then hear that you're doing this kind of stuff with kids that young is admirable. I mean, it's just so absolutely amazing.
Well, and it's been an incredible experience, because I always like to put the disclaimer out that I'm teaching a class, and I was in high school learning how to type on a typewriter. And I didn't have email till the end of my senior year of college. So they're really teaching me more than I can teach them. I may start up the basics, but they extend the programming. They extend how they're using the robots, and their vocabulary just soars in that class. So I end up turning out to be more of just a facilitator and guiding, and they take it and they go far beyond where I thought that class would go. So it's been just an amazing experience to watch this.
So my friend Tom Schwab frequently tells a group of guys that we get together and mastermind like we do as school leaders. And he says, you know, what's ordinary to you is extraordinary to me. And I love that phrase. You talked about how you didn't get email until your senior year in college, right? And now you're teaching these 4, 5, 6-year-olds how to code. What I want to share with the listeners, how do you develop that mindset, or how do you work with staff that coding or innovation, just anything new, is really scary, right? But it sounds like you set up the environment, the atmosphere where kids can thrive. You make sure that they're on the right path, but then you kind of find yourself in the background, allowing them to just really thrive in that environment. So, but how do you make that happen? Because people have to push through that fear. I don't know if you had any starting the class. So can you share a little bit about that?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, it was a little bit unnerving, but I really focused on being a listener, then learner, then leader. And the opportunity really came to me because my eldest son was in the middle school robotics team, and they made it to state and then world competition. And I had no idea what he was doing. And so as a parent, I really started to research and learn more about coding. Well, then I thought, well, if they're doing it as fifth graders, why couldn't we do it at the younger year? So then reaching out to other leaders to find out how they were doing it in the upper elementary, and then saying, well, why couldn't we do it at kindergarten? And so it just really took me, I really don't have any fear of failing because I feel like I trip over myself every day. And I just put myself out there because I think as educators and leaders, we're in a space and age where the kids are really going to start defining their own learning. And so with the shift of where how we learned, where it was an end in mind or a worksheet or the end of the chapter, there was a quiz. Now we really need to set the stage for them to really be owners of their own learning and craft how they're mastering those outcomes. But I invite the teachers to come watch me teach. I invite the feedback from them to tell me how I could teach better. And it helps. I think they see me taking these risks and trying things. And I think in their mind, they look at it and they're like, oh my gosh, I could do that so much better. And I hope they do. I think because they're the teachers, they're the ones who are doing it day in and day out. And so not only do they give me feedback, but then they say, well, if Jessica can do it, I could totally do this with a group of kids. So it's been just modeling some of those things and just really having a mindset of discovery and growth and just being willing to continue to do everything and anything we can to better ourselves for our students.
So you talked about being a little quirky sometimes or stumbling, you know, in your leadership. You mentioned a square peg in a circular hole. How did you become comfortable, I guess, in your own skin, or how did you develop that principal persona? Finding yourself, I'm guessing, in some situations, you're just like, what's going on? You know, what have you learned about yourself, right? And to be comfortable in who you are and how to lead at a high level?
I think it took me especially, and I'm so blessed that the teachers at Woodson have kept me on for 5 years because I really had to grow into this position. And this was my first full principalship. I was an assistant prior to this. So I was trying to build my leadership based upon the models that I had seen doing it really well. And I recognized fairly early on that just because I saw it done well by that person, their personality was very different than mine. And so I really had to kind of get over myself and really understand that I'm not going to be able to lead like all these other great leaders because that's just not my nature. And so I had a really, can I tell you an interesting story about this?
We love stories on this show. Okay. Yes, yes.
So taking negative feedback in my first few years, well, it's still difficult to hear things that you're not doing well. And I was the type that when I get my end of the year results as a principal, I always, instead of focusing on the 83% of the people who thought I was doing well, I was focusing on the other 17% that said I could be better or different or they didn't like it at all. And I still remember my first year, one of the feedback, like comments they made was, she doesn't dress professional enough. And that really hurt my spirit and hurt me. And I'm like, you know, I work at a kindergarten center, you know, I'm not sure. So I took that to heart, and it was an anonymous comment, but it really kind of hurt my heart in the sense of I just never saw that one coming. I knew there was other areas I could work on, but my personal attire was a little bit ruffled with. So the next day I thought, well, I'll pull out the suits I wore at the middle school. And I wore a suit, and paraprofessional that I respect highly in the building came up to me and she said, you know, we don't like it when you wear suits. That's just not your personality. And it really just doesn't look like you, or doesn't look like the image you want our school. And I thought, you're someone I respect and admire, and she's giving me feedback to my face, and I'm not taking that as serious as I did an anonymous comment. So it really, getting comfortable in my own skin really had to help me recognize that I'm never going to please everybody, but I need to work my hardest to please those that I really admire and I appreciate the work they're doing.
Yeah, the feedback can be hard to hear. And so what I heard you saying is, like, this anonymous feedback, you try to find the truth in it and grow where you can, but don't focus so much there when people who care about you and will tell you to your face corrective feedback that you can take action on. You know, it's coming from the right spot too, because they're actually showing up and being courageous in telling you something that potentially could be hard to hear to your face.
Mm-hmm. I think as you're a new leader, I think anybody in either leading from the classroom or leading from the principalship, it's hard to receive that negative feedback, but I think I've just gotten better at it. And I don't take it as personal anymore. I take it as, these are professional comments about what I could do differently as a professional. This is not about me as a person. And once I was able to separate that better, I was able to live a little bit better life and not take all that to heart or home.
How do you do that? Because, you know, I'm in the midst of receiving feedback, which people that know me, one of my top strengths from StrengthFinders 2.0 is absolutely being a learner. And part of that is, I think, learning about myself and self-discovery and being open to feedback and always wanting to improve. But how do you not take it so personal and move past tough comments, or some that I will share in a minute after I hear your response, but like some that are just so, like, I don't know, it seems like nitpicky or just kind of mean-spirited as opposed to helpful and corrective?
No, I try to get better at this every day, and I'm certainly not perfect at it, but I try to take the deep breath if I have to walk away from it and come back. And then I always come from the perspective of not negative intent. I think some of us go, and I think we all do it sometimes, is to go right to negative intent and just start placing blame and judgment. And sometimes I just have to strip the comments down and look at it from the other side and say, what can I gain from this? What is something I could learn from this? And that's been helpful too when I have conflict with parents as well, or parent conflicts with teachers, because ultimately I can never argue with the fact that a parent loves their child and the parent wants the best for their child. It might just be the way we're interacting isn't feeling loving towards the recipient. But if I try to always go from a foundation of not negative intent, and I could learn and grow from this, it seems to help me reframe some of those comments versus taking them personally or taking that to that negative tone.
That's super helpful, this idea of not assuming negative intent. And, you know, the parent has, obviously they love their kid tremendously and want what's best for them. So just figuring out, you know, that's such a humble approach, right? How are they receiving it? And then what's in my power to change, if possible? And I need to do that. Here's some paraphrases, you know. I'm not going to read it specifically. I don't think that'd be right. But things that I remember that hurt was the idea of playing principal, right? So not even, I guess, taking it seriously, but just like playing around at it. I remember somebody said that I'm trying too hard to look cool for preteens, which is not true. I'm trying to look cool for everybody. I'm a human being. I want everybody to like me, to be honest. And then another one that hurt had something to do with the new guy's exactly what I'd expect you'd get from somebody from Chicago. that hurt. I mean, I don't know if it's supposed to be mafia or corrupt or lazy. It's obviously negative, so that stinks. But, you know, I blew it with that parent, and hopefully I could correct it, and hopefully with time and my work ethic and loving people and caring for them with time, that I'll win in that way.
Absolutely. And I really, from my perspective, because I live in a smaller community and I came from a middle school, I was able to build some of those relationships with parents at the upper grades and able to bring that to the lower grades. But usually the toughest parents I work with are the ones whose school didn't go the greatest for them either. And, you know, it's just their own personal experience, but I still have parents to this day that are like, oh, you don't want to go to the principal's office. Oh, you know, and I'm like, I'm really trying not to be that old model of a principal. I think, and you do such a great job of that, Daniel, as well, to redefine the role of the principalship. You can't be the instructional leader sitting in your office answering emails. You have to be out with the students, with the staff, and engaged in learning along with them. And that's a shift for people, and change then sometimes comes back with harsh comments. And a lot of times that's just an adjustment to what the work you're trying to do in the building, or the work that we're trying to do that just looks different than what maybe a quote unquote traditional principal has done in the past.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I don't have it all figured out. I'm working on it, but that's what you're talking about is the vision for what I want the principalship to be in terms of instructional leadership and being out there with people, with kids, really understanding what's going on. And I've got a lot of growth to do in that area, and I'm excited to take on that challenge. It's a lot of fun. So we're talking about areas of growth, that kind of thing. Jessica, what would you consider your worst leadership mistake? What did you learn from it?
I think when I always go from the fact that I'm a recovering assistant middle school principal that moved into the kindergarten center. So my adjustment was quick and hard, going from 6th, 7th, and 8th graders and grading for learning and PBIS and some of those things that you're really involved in the middle level, to I was in a room watching people play with Legos, and I didn't understand it, and I didn't take the time to just listen and learn before I led. I just acted, and I felt like my competence would have been seen through what I was talking about and being, you know, the leader I thought I needed to be. And I really wish I could rewind and start over then, so I could have taken the time to really understand more about those practices, and I probably could have built a lot more bridges than put up fences that first year. But I think maybe too, the teachers have seen that I've changed a lot in 5 years too. And so maybe that's the growth in that. But yes, any new principals or people looking for principal positions, don't go in thinking you know it all, because you really don't know anything. No matter how many classes you took, I mean, and Daniel, you can probably speak to that too. Even
I don't know anything.
Building.
I'm just trying to learn
right.
It. Yeah.
And don't pretend they know. They know, even the 5-year-olds know you don't know anything. So don't pretend you do. Just listen and learn from observing, and you'll pick it up so much faster if you have that open mind to it.
That's great advice. Any other advice in terms of knowing what you know now? What would you tell a novice principal?
Well, and my other piece is really setting some boundaries between the business of work and home, because you teaching and leading, it can be a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week job if you let it. And that's not good for you, that's not good for your students, and that's not good for those around you. So really setting those boundaries, because especially when you're coming into it, you could work 12 hours a day, but if you don't take that time for yourself to rejuvenate, to spend time with your family, to, you know, enjoy life outside of your job, it's going to consume you, and you may not be able to make it your career in it either. It'll burn you out. So just making sure you shut down at night, you know, to either turn off your phone or I take email off my phone. I don't have it on my phone, but setting some of those boundaries so you're not constantly engaged in work. So when you go back to it, you're excited about it.
I do the same thing with email, with notifications. So when I decide to check it, you know, that's when it syncs and updates. I don't get pings, and I don't get that red, you know, that red notification dot of death saying you have emails. Like, oh, that stresses. And I want to know the psychology. Like, why does that little red dot stress me out? I'm sure it stresses everybody out, but that's besides the point. Other boundaries that work for me, I try to work out about 5-6 times a week in the morning before I go to school. So I have to get in bed by 10, between 10 and 10:45. It's a pretty big window, but I want to be lights out, eyes closed, 10:45. And waking up between 4:45, 5:15 to either get some type of run, or if I'm doing heavy lifting, definitely up at 4:45. So I'm in the gym by 5. Outside of that, you know, getting home at a certain amount of time so I can unwind or connect with professionals outside of the community that can push me in a different way, and just to learn. It's good to get that objective feedback, and having time as well to spend with friends or loved ones or my girlfriend as well. So outside of email, are there any other boundaries that you've really set in stone there?
Yep, and I do the inbox zero when I am on email to clear out my inbox every time I get to it. I do my best. Putting blocks of time in my calendar to be out and about has been really helpful to keep my center on students and staff. So if I go into work in the morning, usually between 7 and 7:30, by 7:45, I've left my office and I'm out greeting parents or doing bus duty till 8:30. And then I'm greeting in the classrooms till 9:15. And then at the end of the day too, I'm out and about. So it's creating those pockets of time where I know I'm going to be present. Then when I go back into the office, I have like a half hour, 45 minutes to answer phone calls or messages, just making sure that I keep that purpose. Because otherwise, if you're especially a newer principal, you could sit in your office all day and just answer email and answer phone calls, but then you aren't being seen and you're not seeing the work that's going on. And then one other thing, because I know you as well, we're both very active people. And so sometimes pausing or watching, spectating events for my family is a challenge. So I'm becoming more of an involved parent in the sense that I was an assistant to the assistant soccer coach for my son's team this year, which was more about crowd control for 10-year-olds than anything.
Okay.
And I don't know anything about soccer, but I can control 9 and 10-year-old boys pretty well in a contained space.
Awesome.
And then I signed up like a swim rep for my kid's sport too. So it's more about making conscious effort to be involved in my children's events. And then I feel like even though I can't get to everything, I'm never going to be at every concert or every game. The ones I'm at, I'm fully engaged and I have an understanding and appreciation of what my kids are learning and wanting to do and wanting to do when they grow up.
I think that's really good advice too. You know, figuring out the balance and whatever that means for you, your family, whatever you're all comfortable with. But when you do show up, be there, be present, just focus on your family, that nothing is more important, right? And I do know too, just going back to your comment, running around the school, I screwed that up at the beginning of the year and I would get too much office-y type stuff when classes weren't going on and I didn't see as much of the value. I had to get some good feedback in terms of connecting with folks and relating and talking and all that sort of stuff, traffic in the morning, meeting teachers in classrooms. But once the day started, I was in classrooms like crazy. But that's not... And you're still giving feedback and you're still understanding the building and learning it, but it's not, you're not relating as much. And I'm embarrassed that I missed that, but I got the feedback and I received it. So I made that change, which I'm very happy about.
Well, and you can only get better every day. That's what I look at. So if I did something or I've done a practice that I'm like, ooh, that wasn't good. But I'm like, well, now I know better. So I do better. So that's all we can always do. Model that for our staff and students and ourselves.
Yep, get better every day. Today's show is brought to you by School Spirit Vending. School Spirit Vending has a hassle-free year-round fundraising program for schools, and the best part is that it's absolutely free. With School Spirit Vending, we do all the work, you just cash a check. You can increase school spirit with custom stickers for your school and raise funds at the same time. No upfront costs, no volunteers, no selling. Sick of the same old ways of raising money for your school? Check out schoolspiritvending.com. What would be a class that you would add to our schools that's not currently taught that you know of?
I'm kind of excited to say that we're trying to work on this at our school is really innovating our play center time and making it a maker space as well. So it's in a Nancy and Heidi do that over, and you know Nancy from our mastermind, but they kind of coined it a Plaker space. And I've kind of wanted to look in that a little bit deeper. So taking that play time for developmentally appropriate, you know, preschool, kindergarten, first and second graders, but then adding that maker component to it. So instead of just saying, let's build this tower, you know, posing a question, you know, based upon the story, what kind of a house would fit in the story? Or based upon, you know, what we're talking about, can you create something that would align with this literacy text or things like that? So it's something I'm still kind of researching on, but just really, even at the really young years, you know, just starting to let students become the drivers of their learning and kind of orchestrate where they want that to go. It's really just a powerful tool.
I know you're a consistent blogger, Principal Imbalance, and we will have that linked up in the show notes. But tell me the story, you know, why are you doing it? How'd you get started? And why people who are kind of on the fence, maybe why they should start themselves?
Oh, absolutely. Adam, welcome. Really got me started on blogging. He was my SAVMP mentor, which is like a virtual mentorship program for newer principals and seasoned principals to kind of help them become more connected. So he really pushed me to start to blog about things that I was doing in the school, but then also some personal checks and balances. And I never really thought anyone would read it, honestly, Daniel. And I don't know if a lot of people do or not, but it is such a great accountability tool for myself to really, it's almost like our students, what we think we can say, what we say we can write, what we write we can read, kind of a process. So if I can really articulate that and write it into a blog, I can really hone in on the vision and the things that we're doing to keep it more of a guiding coalition versus just random pieces all over. So it's been really helpful. And then it also, as I'm connecting with more principals and people interested in early learning, I can link them up to some previous posts instead of always recreating the wheel and writing this response from email or writing this response. I can add links to some of the things we've already done. So it's also about collaborating and bridging some of that thing, the work we're doing and expanding on it. But I would really highly encourage anybody to do it. It's a great practice of just continual learning and reflecting.
Have you used anything besides WordPress?
No. And I think I've really only been doing this for like a year professionally. I had one.
It's a long time though.
Yeah, I think, well, 6 years ago we had, six, 7 years ago we had one when we were in the process of adopting. And so I used it as a way to just connect with loved ones about our journey. But this one, yeah, just WordPress. But every once in a while I try to change the font up or the layout, Daniel. I that's the length of my creativity. I was never great at bulletin boards when I was in kindergarten teaching. I always had to pay people to do it, like in coffee.
Shout out to bulletin boards. Shout out to Lisa Krause.
Yeah.
Lisa, I don't know if you listen to my show. We worked together at Franklin Middle, and she was so sweet. She used to do my bulletin boards because if there was a square peg that was trying to go into a circular / triangle, like just not even close to the right shape, I don't do bulletin boards. Listen, I moved to Houston like, I don't know, you know, whatever it is, 5 months, 6 months ago. I still haven't hung my paintings that I brought with me. So, and the funny thing is, Jessica, I appreciate art. I appreciate a great bulletin board. I hate doing them. It's so.
No, I get ya.
Shout out to the bulletin boards.
You know, but those people are out there. Like the people that would always come back and fix mine did not like that the corners weren't edged correctly, or I didn't line up the matching pattern in the back. The triangles weren't in the line with the tear of the paper. So it's, you know, it's a little OCD. So just find those people that are really OCD and friend them and have them walk by your bulletin boards and they'll fix them.
I'm sorry to cut you off. I need to find it. I don't know if I have a picture of this. It'd be so embarrassing to post. My first job teaching, this is how terrible I was at bulletin boards and how much I just didn't care. My first job teaching, sixth grade English language arts, Atlanta, Georgia, and my bulletin board was like a few pictures that kids drew, some student work, and I just stapled it to the cork board.
You did it. Oh, no.
There was nothing in the background. It was just...
Not even like the edged border around the whole thing.
No.
Oh, Daniel, that's shameful.
Hey,
oh my God.
It's not my thing. So it was a cry for help, Jessica. And nobody answered either. That was the worst part. Okay, last tip. This is from somebody who is the worst bulletin boarder. What changed my life is moving from the cheap paper, you know, that comes out on the rolls that every school has. And you need to go to a fabric store. Buy some cool fabric. And know your kids. Like, I was really into African prints because I've been to Africa. I just love Africa. It's just who I am. But I also got camouflage because I thought middle school kids would think that was cool. So I had pink, and I also had the green and black. But once you buy that pattern, you put that up, y'all, you put that up once. It doesn't fade like paper, and you could have it up for the rest of your teaching life.
There you go. You just created a life hack for your listeners right there.
I should have a blog about bulletin boards now, how I went from cardboard to pattern. So, you know.
See, it's a good example of risk-taking and learning by doing, I guess, right?
Jessica, yeah. You are an expert at positive reframing, and I appreciate that about you.
A lot of practice.
Tell me, what's one book every principal should read right now and why?
Oh, you're going to get three. I couldn't narrow it down beyond three. I got it down to three.
I think Fran gave me like 10. So
I know. I listened to his last week. So I'm like, okay, I can go less than 10, but they're just from three different perspectives. So obviously the game changer in education right now for me is the, you know, Kids Deserve It by Adam Welcome and Todd Nesselloni. They are just incredible leaders, and they're just really redefining that leading from the classroom or the principal's office, and just great tips and things that you might already be doing. So they're reinforcing, but then other ideas to extend some of that. Brad Gustafson's Renegade Leadership has been just really helpful for me in looking at like that user guide to understanding innovation and taking it outside of just technology and looking at really more of a process or framework in embedding innovative programming in your school or professional development has been really eye-opening and really inspiring for me as I move forward. But, and we talked about him right before the podcast, but Ken William and Tom Herrick's Starting a Movement has been instrumental in our PLC journey at the Kindergarten Center. And I can't say enough nice things about Ken. He's an incredible person. And if I could maybe make the cover of the book of a t-shirt, I'd wear that t-shirt every day. I love that book. It's a great book. So if you're looking at the PLC journey, if you're wanting to start that, that's a great Ground Zero place to go.
Yeah, and Ken was on the show earlier. I'll look for the episode in a second when you're answering the next question, which is, Jessica, what do you do for fun?
What do I do for fun? Well, when it's not 20 below, I run. I kind of wimp out at 20 below. That's where I don't go outside, Daniel. But if I'm not doing that, I'm cycling or yoga, spending time with friends, spending time with my family, and reading for pleasure as well as professional. And then I mentioned before, you know, coaching soccer and being part of going to swim meets and enjoying engaging in our community. It's so neat to lead where I live. So being able to just be around other people in the community, being a part of our church and other organizations, our YMCA, just it's so neat to see our families out in the community and engaging with them on a different level. So when I'm out at soccer, I'm one of the soccer coaches. I'm not the principal. So it's been fun to develop and build relationships with others when I'm not in the quote-unquote role.
So Ken Williams, that's episode number 31 for our listeners if they want to go back there. And just,
it's a good one. It was a good one.
It's one of Jessica's favorites, and also yes. Just so good about, you know, his work and starting a movement and professional learning communities. If that's the direction of your school, check that out for sure. This is one of my new favorite questions. What would you consider your favorite toy when you were 12?
Oh my gosh, that was not. See, you stumped me on this one. My favorite toy when I was 12. Can it be a game?
Yeah, whatever you want.
Oh my gosh. The Barbie game. It was called the Barbie game, uh-huh. Circa 1951, 52 maybe. My mom had it growing up and gave it to me, and my girlfriends and I would play that thing forever. It's a board game. The Barbie game.
It's all good.
I still have it. I still have it.
No
you
way.
You still have bulletin board issues. I have this old, like the box is all torn up, but we have, and we used to, because the object of the game was to get to go to prom. I mean, that was, you know, that was a big deal.
Yeah.
So you had to buy the dress. That was like $35. And then instead of like going to prom with Ken or Poindexter or like Barbie figurines, we always changed it to like the middle school boys that we were crushing on.
Tommy
Jackson.
Yeah,
Tommy's like, yes. I'm going to take a picture of this and show it to you.
If you do, I could put it on the blog and that'd be sweet.
Oh my gosh, I cannot believe I just said that out loud. There goes any credibility in the last 40 minutes of our conversation right there.
I think we have the title too, you know, for the show. So I'm just playing. Jessica,
unconventional leadership, that's right there.
That's a back to that positive reframing. Love it. What message would you put on all school marquees if you could for a day?
Dream big for all learners. Just dream it big, blow it up. What is what we want for kids, and then think bigger.
Dream big for all learners. And so you're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by the budget or the resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school, and what would be your top three priorities?
Flexible learning for adults and students. So making sure the spaces that are created have multiple different seating options, have different types of low and high tech technology embedded in it, making sure, you know, one thing that I didn't think was a big deal and now I do is making sure that there's a comfortable place for the adults to relax and rejuvenate and have professional development in. That's something that I'm really working on this year is making sure that the adult learners in our building have a good space instead of just the hand-me-down chairs and desks and broken tables, you know, that have the one wheel that's not working, to really make sure that they really understand how the professionalism of their work and that I honor that. What else would I want in there? Oh, lots of physical gross motor opportunities. Whether an indoor running track would not be a bad idea in Austin, Minnesota, with the temperatures as cold as it is. I think we're going on day four of indoor recess, which is kind of brutal. So some type of a big gym, lots of physical activity for our little guys would be great.
And back to what you said about running, you know, negative 20, you get a pass on that because here in Houston, like it hits 40 and people are in, like, I've literally seen people in fur coats at 40. It busts their hearts. It's just different, right? And
yeah.
I know once I go through a full summer, my blood's going to thin and my ability to withstand the cold's going to change too. But right now, while I still got it, it's funny.
Use it. Oh, yeah. Be the brave one out there.
Just for now. So, Jessica, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice? What's the best way to get a hold of you?
Twitter, Voxer, the blogs up there. You know, I just think I've had a great opportunity to connect with so many people in the last year or two. If there's any way that I can help other people who are a little bit interested in connecting, interested in getting on Twitter, interested in like a mastermind, if I can do anything to help continue to grow the good and pay it forward, if you have anything, if you're like, this is a stupid question. I just talked about the Barbie game. You can ask me anything. Nothing's a stupid question. So just being available and hoping to help other leaders grow too.
Jessica, is your Voxer handle the same as Twitter?
Yes. Yep.
Okay, then I'll link both those up in the show notes. Well, Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Jessica. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Jessica in the search bar. The show notes page will pop up, magically appear, and you'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Jessica, thank you again for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Absolutely. It's my honor. Thank you, Daniel.
Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Have you gotten value from today's show? Help me reach even more listeners by leaving a 5-star rating and review. Click the podcast artwork and press the Show Some Love link to leave an honest rating and review. A long, long time ago in a galaxy far away, patrons would sponsor artists to create something the patron valued. Would you consider becoming a patron of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast? If you found this podcast valuable, if the show has pushed your thinking about leadership, and if you've benefited in any way, then I would be honored if you would become a sponsor. Sponsorship is easy. Head over to patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes to become a patron for as little as $1 a month. If you pledge 10 bucks a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every other month. That's patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes. Do you have a question or need some leadership advice? I want to connect with you. I read every email, tweet, snap that's sent to me. Links are in the show notes to connect via email and social media. Better Leaders, Better Schools is a proud member of the Edu Podcast Network, podcast for educators, podcast by educators. You can listen to more great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.